You're listening to Freethinker Radio on 90.1 KPFT Houston, your home for uncensored news and underground music since 2011.
All right, welcome to Freethinker Radio on KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. I'm Mike. I'm here with Johnny and Derek. How are y'all?
What's up?
What's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of Freethinker Radio. And this is cool because we are in person. Again, it's always nice when we're in person. And this is going to be the last time we're in person, at least for me.
That's it. No more being in person.
For a while.
For a little bit. Yeah. Not forever.
Don't be so absolutist.
You know, as you said, we're doing this on KPFT, broadcasting every Friday. And KPFT has a new home. I don't know if we've actually mentioned this on
air. We have.
But maybe we've mentioned it. It's for those who haven't heard, KPFT does have a new home. It's not open yet. We're not in there yet. But hopefully in the coming months, by the end of this year, hopefully that would be awesome. The building will be opening up and you guys will be back in the studio. And I'll be in the studio when I'm in town. But until then, we're happy to broadcast you guys. We do this every week. We broadcast across several different platforms. Odyssey, Rockfin, DLive, of course, every Friday at 5 p.m. on 90.1 KPFT in Houston. You can find out about them at kpft.org. It's Houston's only community commercial-free radio station. And they let us talk about all the important topics. That's why we say that Freethinker Radio is uncensored news and underground music, because that's what we do, right?
Yeah.
Yep. So we got some stuff to cover today. Let's get into a couple of events and things before we get into some local news. Mike, I know you got a few you want to get into.
Definitely. Next Saturday is the event I wanted to talk about. It's going on June 18th. It's a rager at Trip 6 for Lizette Guerrero's birthday. And if you don't know Lizette, she's the individual who's been making all these pinatas that have... been showing up at shows and around town and in magazines around town, etc. Also, the bands there, Your Disorder, El Jumbotron, you may have heard of, Fusca, you may have seen some videos here with us, Always Guilty Ska Punk, I don't think I've heard them yet, The Posers, Houston, Texas, Cocaine Titans, and Ganesha. So that's a heavy lineup out of Trip 6 on the 18th. I may well go out there and see about maybe, I wonder if since it's Lisette's birthday, if she made a pinata for us, I mean, for her birthday.
Maybe some of the bands will be playing some special songs for her birthday.
That'll be pretty sick. I know you were talking about some interesting events coming up.
Yeah, this week we have a fun movie night this Friday. So I guess if you're hearing this on the radio, it'll be tonight, and it's at 7 o'clock, or really whenever the lights go down, or the sun goes down. 323 Hutchison Street, that's House of J. It's going to be zombie movies. I know Return of the Living Dead's one of them. I can't remember the other one, but it is pretty graphic. Wouldn't recommend for children for this round. Yeah.
Zombies!
You just put on the Fear and Loathing glasses, Derek? Those are nice.
I did. It's time for that. Well, awesome events. I wish I was going to be here. So that's Saturday, you said?
No, that's going down Friday. And Saturday, there's a show at House of J as well. It's going to be Cherry Mom. And Anomaly and a couple of other awesome bands. It's going to be like indie rock, that kind of stuff. There's usually other shows. I'm sure there's more.
Very cool. I'm sad I'm not going to be here in Houston for that. Like I said, I'm heading back Saturday. But awesome to hear those events are happening. As always, guys, the events and the news that we cover in our show can be found at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. We post the archives every week. And yeah, anything else you want to mention as far as events?
Oh, that's it for the short term. I'm sure we'll always get into them. We love to mention events. We love to mention events that people tell us about. And yeah. I know no matter – we have listeners all over, and I know that KPFT's got a very far reach that some people up in Livingston might not go to something in Galveston. But wherever you are, I think it's an essential part of freedom to be able to get out and do things and interact or just explore the world. And I hope that – our listeners take some time for themselves to do that in whatever way they find fit. We recommend some things we like, but hey, there's more. So let us know what's going on. Yeah. If it's sick, we want to get into it.
Houston's a super eclectic city. Like, if you can't find something that interests you, you're not really looking hard enough, in my opinion. But
absolutely. Well, all right, let's get into it, guys. We are with you for the next 50 minutes or so. We got a couple songs to play and some important stories to cover, some weird things, some disturbing things, and some more criminals out there doing things. But the one story I wanted to start with, since we're going to start with local as we always do, is a decade ago, a story that some of you might remember, a story that myself and Micah and maybe some old school listeners to this show may remember. But 10 years ago, April and May, so just a little bit over 10 years ago, in April 2012, the TSA, along with the Houston Metro, people doing the, you know, the bus lines and all that, they announced that they were going to be starting a program called Bus Safe. And I can't remember what the acronym stood for, but it was something. But Bus Safe is what they called it. And they had a big old press conference with, I forgot about it because I've seen her around so much, and I feel like we should mention it. Like, hey, Sheila Jackson Lee, you were there. You tried to get this program. She was there proudly on the day they had this press conference near downtown. Her, Department of Homeland Security officials, Metro officials, the mayor at the time, they were all there announcing, there's going to be, we're working with the TSA, the people who usually search you at the airport are going to be coming onto the buses, and that they were going to doing a sweep of certain bus routes and bus stops and shelters, and that the riders can expect bag searches when officers have probable cause, they claimed. They will conduct canine sweeps and look for aberrant behaviors that could identify potential terrorists, they
say. Safety.
This is the sort of post 9/11 stuff 10 years ago, you know, it's still around, but definitely a lot more prevalent. Metro Police Chief was saying, you know, that the TSA's role to the sweep was limited, but they were going to be involved and yada, yada, yada. So we had a member of the Houston Freethinkers, which is a group that we were involved in, the three of us were involved in for years, that this show was kind of, born out of. And our friend Philip, I still remember, Philip was a guy we used to be involved with back then. He happened to be downtown, and he saw the press conference. He took a picture. He sent it to us. Was like, check this out. There's this. They just announced this crazy program. There's TSA people downtown, like, searching people. And we were like, what the heck? So we heard about it, started doing some research, started making a noise about it, found out that there was some lawyers who were also upset about this. Then we found out that the Metro, the people behind this, were having a board meeting coming up. And, you know, these board meetings for corporations like them are typically probably stuffy things that nobody's boring, paying attention to, you know. Well, we show up, myself, Micah, and several members of the Houston Freethinkers, along with these lawyers. I'd say, what, like maybe 50 people the first time? I know the second time there was even more people, but let's say 50 or so people the first time show up to the Metro board meeting. And, you know, we give our testimony. We're all each given a minute or a couple minutes to say our thing, and everybody's out there. And the local news starts covering it, as I was just showing on screen. And then the first meeting got so big that they basically said, we weren't prepared for this. We're going to schedule a second meeting a week and a half from now just to talk about this. Because this was supposed to just be one agenda item, and then like 200 or like 50 people show up like, hey, we want to talk about the TSA. And they were just like, okay, thank you, thank you. And they were just overwhelmed. So the second meeting, we organized, the lawyers organized, and in that time, I think 100, 150 people showed up, and the whole room was just packed full of people ready to just testify one after the other. The lawyers were like, we're going to sue you guys for violating people's Fourth Amendments. You know, we were out there. I remember, I think I probably quoted that Benjamin Franklin quote about giving up security. It was just like,
it applies.
Know, it was a good activist like time. And like, of course, the best thing is that we were successful. And as you can see on the headline here, Metro says it won't do random bag checks, which is, you know, they kind of make it seem a little more mundane. But the truth is the TSA backed off. They dropped this whole program. You know, after people organizing, Metro Transit Authority has not conducted random bag searches, they claim, and they're not going to do so. The announcement came in response to fiery comments from residents and lawyers about the agency's decision to invite the TSA agents to join them earlier this month and its announcement that officers would perform random bag checks. They later corrected the statement. They claimed, never mind, there weren't any bag checks. That was just the thing. And they have a quote from me saying that, reference my Fourth Amendment and criticize what he said was local and federal officers questioning of riders during the 13th, asking where riders were coming from and whether they often rode. That's what we were hearing from people, is that they were being questioned. Like, they were trying to claim it wasn't the TSA was back, but they were literally going to people like, where are you going? What route are you taking? And just getting all up in people's business, which, you know, for people who are out there saying they care about the poor, the lower income people, the people of color, well, that's who rides the buses typically. And these are people that were going to have their rights violated by the TSA just because they have to ride a bus, because they couldn't afford a car or because they don't want to take a car, whatever. And they quote me here saying, I don't feel like by purchasing a ticket or riding a bus that I have to forfeit my constitutional rights and my protections and be subject to search or seizure. We don't plan on letting this issue die if the TSA stays in our city. And then so that kind of, yeah, that was, and yeah, it, you know, like I said, it got covered by different local media in Houston and elsewhere.
That was like what, I wasn't there in Freethinkers, the Houston Freethinkers, like whatever the live meetup group was during that time, but I remember when I heard that story, that's what made me feel like I could make a difference, because I was like, holy crap, like, sometimes you do win, and you can get those small wins, and you can do it locally, and it does just take a couple of people to help organize or facilitate that in some kind of way. So it's like, if you have something you're passionate about, a lot of people wait for other politicians, you know, maybe some people would have wrote somebody a letter about that or something, but luckily Derek and Micah took a more direct approach. They got on the buses, and you said, no, you can't search my bag. I'm not telling you where I'm going, and you kind of showed people as an example, like, there's a faster way of shutting this down, and I don't know. I just thought that was awesome, and
well, I think
those opportunities are dwindling in a lot of ways. It's getting harder to do that kind of stuff.
It's those little decisions, though, and I think that's the other thing about it, is by not being someone, you know, with a lot of money to fight in the justice system or political clout or even, you know, social clout with a massive audience or something. Y'all keep sharing and liking. But at that point, being able to go out, just being like a guy on the street with a camera filming these things that were happening, and they did feel like there was just so much change and so much acquiescence to authority that I guess those things were able to reach a lot of people in that time. And I remember then seeing stuff like, who's it, Luke over at We Are Change and other people, you know, during that time doing that. And I don't know. I mean, I know that people are still going to the streets and you know, standing up for things they believe in. And I commend, you know, the people that do peacefully and, you know, for a freer world. But I do think sometimes that's all it takes. And, you know, and I think what you said was really, it was heartwarming to hear. But I think it's really important because people do, it's true, people do feel more comfortable when they're not alone. And, you know, sometimes just you and a friend can go out there and spread some flyers about something that you put together, do some research, and, you know, just go out on a Saturday to the skate park. Yeah.
Yeah, I think also what I'll add to that, and I want to play just the 2 minutes of the talk I gave. I was trying to find yours, Micah. You spoke that day as well, I know that.
I know I spoke this second day.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm trying to find the video. But what I was going to say is that the other thing, kind of what you were adding, is that to me the cool thing from being involved and experiencing it, like, again, like, I think the lawyers being involved had a huge weight, of course. But we definitely were at that time, that was about 2 years into the Houston Freethinkers activist community experiment, and we were growing very rapidly. And so when we told people, hey, this is happening, people came. And we had, you know, a good crew of people who came because of us talking about it and saying it was going to happen, us going ourselves, and then the second time telling people, this is your chance. If you missed the first one, come to this one. This is going to make a big difference. And the fact that we didn't go to the government and kind of beg them, like, hey, city council, please help us. We just went to the corporation. That's the difference. Is the Metro Corporation works with the city, and they're kind of, you know, a really weird corporation. But at the end of the day, they are a corporation with a board of directors. Yeah. You know, the mayor does pick, you know, with some of the members. But the thing is that they are more likely, I think, to listen to the people if the people are like, we're not going to ride your buses if this is going on. And the lawyers are saying, we're going to sue you if this is happening.
See, that's
what they're afraid of, you know.
And that's what I was going to say. I think having so many of our friends there with us, so many people that cared about it, like Philip, who shared the picture, I think that helped it be something more than just some obscure lawyer legal technicality in a meeting
and
someone might write up in the Chronicle, but, you know, would people be moved to the same degree? I don't know.
Is it not interesting how COVID-19 like totally switched up how civil disobedience like that could be looked at? Anyway, I'm gonna let you play this video.
So this is from, I think this is, let me see the meeting. This is the first one, April 26, 2012. And if I remember, or this might have been the second one, but we'll go ahead and play it either way. This is myself speaking. I believe this is the second one because the room looks pretty full.
Sean, and again, we appreciate the dialogue. Mr. Derek Bros. Mr. Bros. Welcome, Mr. Bros.
Thank you for having me. I apologize for interrupting a second ago.
No worries.
I'm with the Houston Freethinkers. I'll just make this brief.
Speak up a little bit. I'm so sorry.
No, I've got 2 minutes, so I'll make this brief. I'm here to speak about the TSA, of course, being here at the bus stations. First of all, it's a violation of my Fourth Amendment. I'm a frequent rider of Metro, the rail, and the bus lines around the city. And just like at the airport, I don't feel like by purchasing a ticket or riding the bus that I have to forfeit my constitutional rights and my protections and be subject to search or seizure, how this gentleman just described it. I know you guys said that we didn't search anybody's bags, but we actually have pictures of you guys, or the Metro Police and the TSA inspectors on the buses and stopping buses and questioning everybody who's getting on and off the bus. Where are you coming from? Do you normally ride this bus? And generally getting in people's business who are just trying to go on their way to work and on their way to school. And also the idea that the TSA can keep us safe is false as well. I follow the TSA very closely, and those who do as well know that the TSA has had 25,000 security breaches since 9/11. They've stolen over $35,000 worth of electronics from passengers. Just yesterday, two TSA agents got caught doing a drug smuggling exercise out of Los Angeles. And this is just a violation of our civil liberties. I think that if you guys do truly care about your riders, then you'll listen to what everybody has to say today, because we don't plan on letting this issue die if the TSA stays in our city. And I'd just like to close with one thing that Benjamin Franklin said, that those who give up liberty in the name of security deserve neither. So thank you, guys.
Good stuff.
Yeah, so that was 2012. I mean, 10 years ago, it's crazy, man. I mean, shout out. I know we've had people over the years say thanks for that and this and that. And, you know, obviously with activism, at least for me, it's become increasingly important over the years, especially this year. I feel like this has been in my mind of measuring the impact you have, but not just with activism, with anything, though, right? Like, say you want to do something that you love, and if you're getting something out of it and you're getting a rewarding feeling, there's positive, you know, something positive coming out of it, then you continue, right? But if you feel like you're doing something and you're just spinning your wheels, you're wasting your time, then hopefully you try a new strategy. And so I've been having that idea in my head of like, are the things I'm doing achieving the goals I want, right? And in this case, the activism of what was first a reaction, like, oh my God, this is happening in our city. We have to stop this. This cannot possibly happen. You know, we were already upset about what was happening at the airport. It's like, there's no way we're letting them come into the buses. And I really did ride the bus at the time. And getting not just mad and upset, and not just passing out flyers and complaining about it on the internet, but doing all that, but then still rallying people, going out there, being able to express our voices, having that good feeling, and then getting the result you want. I mean, that's the ideal situation, right? It doesn't happen too often with activism.
No.
It's a really cool feeling.
Yeah, it's definitely from the beginning to the end with that particular example. So that was a good time for sure. And, you know, I'm pretty sure that during that time we were on Freethinker Radio already. We're already hosting Freethinker Radio.
Yep.
We reported about it and communicated the ideas concerned therein.
One of the things that you think about, it's like, you know, when the TSA was like getting put on the airports, like why people weren't able to push harder is because like there was such that like fresh fear of the attack that had just happened. And you know, it's the same thing for, like I was saying earlier, like how if you were to be an activist, like for example, we saw when people protested the lockdowns or if they tried to just not wear a mask on a bus or something like that, the fact that other people around them were afraid caused them to like have that like discourse like back and forth. And so like it made it so much harder. But like when y'all were having the buses, like what year was that exactly?
2012.
So that's still 11 years off of, like, you know, I mean, nothing in particular was happening with the TSA. So it seemed random and people were able to, like, rally behind it. But it's like,
oh, it wasn't how, as fresh as,
you know, like, what I'm saying? Like, so it's like, that is an interesting idea.
I will say this, though.
Because it's like how people activate.
At that time, if I was understanding the point of what you're saying, at that time, though, there was still, like, the Boston bombing had literally just happened. Like, so there was definitely a lot of push for, like, why we need the TSA on the buses and on the streets.
They still had it.
And I want to say this, too, because what happened in Houston, it wasn't unique to Houston, not just the bus safe program, but they had, I don't know if they called it subway safe, but it was the same idea. They started going to certain subways and train stations, and in many of those cities, like Boston, Chicago, I think New York, and a few others, they're still there because nobody pushed back. So if we hadn't organized, not just us, but everybody who collectively did through that activity 10 years ago, there might be TSA searching people on the buses today in Houston.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I think that's the big takeaway.
I agree.
We got a lot to cover, so let's jump forward. But I just wanted to take a moment to commemorate that and say for anybody out there who ever feels hopeless, like maybe your activism is not getting you anywhere, you know, it is important to measure the things you're doing and see what works and what doesn't. But it can have a difference, for sure. It can make a difference.
And I think it's interesting because we're going to talk about another program later on where people were able to stand up and at least slow it down in their city. Because, you know, that's an example. And sometimes you forget these programs are going on. And I'm sure a lot of small towns, you know, in our broadcast area are starting to see things that they haven't seen before, that they're not used to seeing in their, you know, town. More monitoring, et cetera. So, you know, seeing that it's going on in all these other places and in different ways people stood up, you know, we can maybe get some lessons learned.
Absolutely. Well, let's go ahead and jump forward, Micah. I got this story that you had about some preachers. Is there some changes going on in local schools? What exactly is happening?
Preach, Micah.
Who thinks this is a good idea? What is going on here? Tell me all about it.
I was really trying to understand this to begin with, you know. I was like, what? They're going to start putting preachers in schools, it turns out, in HISD. The program is intended to increase security at HISD. I'm not exactly sure how. Are they going to be packing?
The power of Christ will compel them.
I guess, you know, the thing to ask yourself is this only one religion's one religion being represented by these guys? What's the deal here, and who are they? So, you know, this is going to be unfolding more, I'm sure, as we go on. But the initial news is that there's this program out there, and it's intended to increase security. I'm sure it's another one of these, you know, reactions to, you know, what happened in Uvalde. So they want to say they're going to have a safe start to the summer. We're reaching out to the students now, and we don't have to react later. That's what the superintendent, Millard House, said. We're taking a close look at how we supply our officers to make sure they have what they need in case of a major incident. So, you know, we can think about that. You know, they're going to have more what? What are the officers going to have more of? It turns out that Governor Abbott announced plans for a school safety review. According to the governor, he's calling for in-person, unannounced, random intruder detection audits on school districts. Doesn't sound like too bad an idea, right? Knowing what happened in Uvalde, I can assure everyone that we are committed and will do everything in our power to keep our kids safe, said HPD Assistant Chief Ban Tien. HISD has implemented Project Safe Start to end previous school years. The program adds more police to campuses and brings roughly 60 preachers to 14 high schools and 6 middle schools. So, you know, preachers could be at your kids' middle school, so keeping them safe. It turns out these preachers are from Houston Ministers Against Crime, HMAC. We will have our preachers at every school at certain trouble spots to help make sure we can cut down the flames and have some peace and harmony and safety this school year, said Pastor F.N. Williams.
Are they armed with rulers?
With no incident again at the close of our schools. I don't know. I'm kind of trying to understand this separation. You know, you got to send your kid to school.
I don't understand where the protection comes in.
What exactly are they doing? Do they
know karate?
That's what I was wondering. Are they going to be packing heat? And what happens when one of these gets hurt? Are they going to be suing the school district?
He's got the cane. He's like pretending that he's like just an innocent old man, but inside the cane,
he throws it down and snakes come out and attack.
They're all like secretly military trained Navy SEALs or something. I don't know. I think that
we got Jocko Willinks in a priest robe.
I think in a very just general way, you know, some people, and in the mainstream, they try to have this promotion. I think it's a fake thing that maybe people believe they buy into, that religious types like this, the pastors and the priests, are, you know, holy men in this certain way, and thus, like, I guess them being there on campus is going to calm the children. We've got the priest here, and he's there to calm you down, or whatever. Like, to me, it just...
It would have made me very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't... I don't know what exactly... And, I mean, I don't even want to say my
like,
worst fear.
He'd be like, peace be with you. He'd be like, hey, go away.
I have some fears, but, I wouldn't say unfounded, about
means. Let's always end this with the good old Free Thinker Radio. We hope it helps.
I hope it helps. Yeah.
We do genuinely hope that school is safer.
Maybe some of those kids can help those pastors.
It worries me, though.
Yeah, maybe some.
I'm serious. Like, maybe they can help them. And I'm not sure, though. Those are things to ask about. Like, why are they there? What do they do? And, you know, what other group would they be like, okay, we're going to have 80 people from the bowling league up here at the school to help protect it. We're going to have 70 Teamsters up here.
I think it is an interesting...
We got Joel Osteen in
it's
the...
It's an interesting sort of relationship between church and state going on there. Because
in
the
Texas,
schools are funded
sure.
by the government, for sure.
And you have
in
to
Texas,
send your kid.
Yeah.
And you got to put them there or do something with them, right? So it's like... And then we're going to bring the church in there.
Well, this could be fun, actually. This could be really fun, because then maybe all the other kids from other religions will get upset, so we got to put their priests in the school,
then
too.
Then you're going to end up with
it's like holy
60
wars.
Buddhists,
you're
60
like,
Catholic
yeah.
priests. See, I don't know if this is good.
Yeah. It's basically, yeah.
Well, let's continue.
That'd be a fun lunch.
We got one more local story here in Houston before we jump into some national, international news. Johnny's going to tell you about genetic experiments on hamsters. I can't even believe these people.
Save the hamsters.
Going to get into that and much more here on Freethinker Radio. What I want to talk about first, though, is just an update on the story that I know Micah covered about a shooting involving Mr. Jalen Randall, who was killed on April 27th by a Houston police officer. And there was a statement put out just in the last couple days by Houston Police Chief Troy Finner, where he essentially accused the lawyer representing Mr. Randall, who is a well-known lawyer, and I will say has been accused in some circles of being an opportunist, let's say, you know, for these kinds of big cases. He likes to get in there and be involved in big, high-profile cases, Benjamin Crump. Well, the chief basically called him a liar. And so this is the statement, though. I just wanted to read this. It says, in accordance with our policy, HPD released body-worn camera videos within 30 days of the incident. It's being thoroughly investigated by a special investigations unit, the internal affairs, and the DA's office, and the entire investigation will be reviewed by the Independent Police Oversight Board. And it says, as with all shootings involving an officer, the DA will present the investigation to a grand jury. And it says, on Monday afternoon, June 6th, I met with community members to brief them on false information being released regarding the fatal incident involving Mr. Randall. He says, with respect and understand emotions and pain that families who have lost loved ones go through, having said that, the family's attorney, Mr. Ben Crump, who I respect as an advocate for justice, is claiming Mr. Randall was shot in the back of the neck or head. This is a false statement. To publicly make such a claim is irresponsible. And he says, official autopsy results are pending. Preliminary results indicate there was one gunshot wound to the front of his neck. I don't know if that makes any better, but I think obviously the implication is he was shot running away. Who knows? I don't know. I haven't seen it. He says, Mr. Crump and his team have publicly stated and used a diagram to indicate the gunshot wound was to the back of the neck. Mr. Crump should correct the false information and explain the diagram that he's using is not part of the official autopsy. And he says, it is necessary to correct this misinformation. So that was the statement from the police chief. And then we got a statement responding. We had the family, Jalen Randall's family, responding to that thing, to that statement from the chief. And they, I think that they're taking issue with, obviously the lawyer's taking issue with being called a liar. He might be a liar. He's a lawyer. It said that a Houston man's official autopsy results haven't been released yet in the 6 weeks since he was fatally shot, but that hasn't stopped the police chief and the lawyer from disputing each other's take. Jalen Randall's family was front and center during a news conference just this Wednesday to specifically address the chief's comment. And as I said, chief put out this statement, and he said that, you know, this is false. Well, the family went on to ask observers of the case to not rush to judgment and to wait for the investigation to be completed, which I think is a fair thing to say. They said, the parents, Warren Randall and Tiffany Rachel, said that they believed the assertion of a bullet in the back of their son's neck was consistent with what the family was told by the emergency room doctors and the funeral home director, as well as what the family saw in body cam footage released by the department late last month. The family believes that in no case was the shooting justified. And that's, I think, the important thing to kind of take away from there.
Yeah,
they're saying, like, hey, whether or not he was shot in the back, like, he shouldn't have been shot in this situation. But he wasn't armed, if I remember correctly, right, Micah? He was just running away.
I believe this guy had a gun in a bag.
We always see the cops, like, run and jump.
But he had nothing in his hands, if I remember, when he was shot.
It's funny how, like, the cops will run and jump and make the same statement of, like, but we don't know. But just to let you know, we don't know. Like, it could have been in the front. But it could have been in the back. But it's like they always get them. Like, we saw the same thing in the Tuttle case. Like, you know, you get out ahead of it and try to, like, just,
is this the same
automatically one absolve the cop and,
like,
protect
a
them
half a second to before
I'm
he was
pretty
shot
sure it was, like,
if so, then he had a gun in a bag.
It might not be the same because they're not talking about him having a gun, so I don't want to confuse the two.
Yeah.
This is Jalen Randall, killed on April 27th. They said they were trying to arrest him on 3 felony warrants.
Yeah,
I think
this
was
him,
one, including felon in possession. He was a passenger in a car, police say, sped away, which led to a short chase. The police body cam shows the officer getting out of the passenger side
and
of the vehicle.
And in a second, pretty much shoots
him.
He
gave him a command, but then shooting him before even finishing his sentence.
Yep.
Right,
And then the officer issues an expletive.
Let me,
like,
see your hand.
The minute,
boom, boom. Oh.
And then the officer goes, I can't say the word because it's not FCC compliant, but he's like, put your hands up, bam, 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 oh, sunshine.
Yeah. Yeah, they're quoting him right here in this article, and that's what it appears to be. Okay, so the other update that I'm sharing here is that the family did meet with Harris County DA Kim Ogg, and they said it was a meaningful meeting. So this investigation is ongoing. The police, I'm not here. I don't think we should, you know, I think it's a good statement for either way for both the chief and the family to say, let's kind of not rush to judgment, because as we've seen, Well, for one, I think it's interesting that not every case like this gets all the high-profile media that some of them get, you know?
Yeah.
Because things like this could be blown up by the media if they chose to report on it. And I'm not saying this one should or whatever, or the other ones shouldn't have, but it just shows you that if the media wanted to, if CNN wanted to be running full-time coverage on this,
There's a difference between the ones they select and the ones they don't.
Because people would be hearing about it more and people would be outraged. I guarantee you, most people in Houston don't even know this thing's happening.
I mean, the Tuttles,
it's not the story
example.
They're being told, or the Tuttles, or whatever.
I mean, that's like, I think your average person, if they just heard about that story of the Tuttles, and like they would be outraged, but they didn't hear about it. You know, they maybe on this, the People News, perhaps a few others, but and of course, you know, we did. It was covered in some of the local media, and that's how we were also able to get some of the information to more people. And that's
some digging, But I think on the public side of things, it didn't catch in the way that some other cases have.
No.
As far as like the outrage and this and that, I mean, I will shout out the people who did work on the case.
Yeah,
the people like
kinda
us who did follow it. Like, that's important. Let's go to a quick music break, guys. We're 30 minutes into this show. We got another half hour with you. We've got Cities Without Cars. We got Detroit shotgun gunshot detectors. Some sort of sex abuse case going on in Utah. Johnny's got hamsters being tweaked, and Micah's got some Elon Musk. We're going to see if we can get into all this in the next half hour. We're going to play a quick song, though, from Jeremy Carswell. Stay tuned, guys. This is Freethinker Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston. We'll be right back.
We gather round, put something in the air. Under the
All right, former guest here on Freethinker Radio, Jeremy Carswell, also played a number of benefit shows. But yeah, that's from his album 2025. He's been, as we heard last time, working on a new release, and we look forward to that from him shortly. We also enjoy playing all kinds of music, so send us your links, and I'm sure all y'all know how. And if not, just email visionarynoise@gmail.com.
Yeah, last week we played Mono, a guy I met on tour. He's originally from Canada, living in Mexico, and he sent us some of his music, and we played that last week. So we do play your music if you send it to us. Appreciate that, guys. All right, I'm going to hit one story.
We played more than a couple of acts from Australia. We played
from all over the world. Yeah. So whether you're listening to us in the U.S., Houston, wherever, hit us up. As Micah said, you can find us, you can email us, you can, if you do follow us, wherever you follow us, comment below. And we're even just talking about off-air. Maybe there's a way for us to let you guys send us voice messages that we can play on air for people who
questions,
might think that's
headlines,
cool. But I'm going to jump into this first story. This is just a quick headline. I mean, it's not really too deep to get into at the moment. But for those who are unfamiliar with what's called ShotSpotter technology, this company, ShotSpotter Incorporated, I guess it's really called Gunshot Detection Technology. The company is ShotSpotter. They have been involved with this kind of tech since like 2005, 2008. I remember first hearing about it in Chicago and things like that. Houston, the city of Houston, this is why I'm kind of bringing it up, is the city of Houston just this past year, late last year, they signed, the city council approved $1 million multi-year, five-year contract with ShotSpotter Incorporated to install these gunshot detection devices. And what they, at least the way they used to do it when they first started, maybe they're doing it differently now, is attaching these things to light poles. And so if you're out in the street and somebody shoots a gun, it activates this thing and it turns on, starts recording, and it notifies them, hey, there's the gunshot we heard. And they claim, I was reading this article, they claim that those things are only held for a certain amount of time. But really, we don't know. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainties, I'll say that. But while Houston is approving a multi-million dollar contract for 5 years, the city of Detroit, the Detroit City Council, decides to postpone their vote on it. Now, this wasn't a complete victory, but they delayed action on a proposed expansion. So they've already got some of it in the city, and they wanted to expand it for $7.5 million and $1.5 million to renew the existing contract. And basically, you have different city council members, some of them kind of speaking against it. You had local privacy activists and digital rights groups were talking. There actually seems in this case to have been some communication with the city. I was reading about what happened in Houston, and some people did go speak out and were like, hey, this technology could be dangerous, but also it doesn't really work. There's no proof that it's actually doing what they claim. ShotSpotter claims it's this great thing, but there's no real, hard metrics on that. And so that's a similar concern that they were saying here. So the latest request would expand the software to different districts, not the entire city. Three committee members said they were disappointed that a police department rep could not be made available Monday to answer questions about the system, and no future date is scheduled to bring it back to committee. So basically they're saying, we want to know more about this, and the cop didn't bring anybody to actually answer questions. And so they're like, all right, well, we're not going to expand it if you can't answer any questions for us. And so I think that's at least
fair enough.
It's a good move. Whereas in Houston, only one city council member voted against it. And I want to give credit to council member Letitia Plummer. I tried to get her on the show. We reached out to her office. Hopefully we'll get her on sooner or later. But she was the only one that said, like, again, there's no proof this really works. This could start profiling people. It could be abused. And she's just saying we need more information about it. And originally there was two or three people that were against it, but ultimately she ended up being the only person in the city of Houston to vote against that.
I mean, let's think about it just for a second. What's the real gain? You're going to know a gunshot went off. That's what you're going to know, or loud, concussive firework.
I can tell you it's not doing anything in the second ward.
I mean, people already shot the gun. Then you send the car over there. Wouldn't you know that if, like, someone shot someone and they called the police?
It records the shots, and they send cops with blankets and cocoa right away.
Well, one of the things I will say is that in the city of Houston, the mayor and the Houston Police Department, they recently put out some stats claiming that, like, look, this proves over the last year of us testing this out, because they had a small pilot program in one part of the city, and now they're like, we're doing the whole city of Houston in the next couple of years. They claim that you could, there was some sort of visible increase in crime. They're basically saying, like, hey, this actually led to us catching more bad guys.
I shouldn't shoot my gun. They might hear it.
And they released the cases, and it was like, I would say 75% of them, if not more, were just misdemeanors. Now, I'm not saying a misdemeanor couldn't still be something that's bad or you don't like. Misdemeanors is a pretty broad range. But generally speaking, it's like the lower tier of doing bad things, And so it's like, okay, they put in these things at what cost? Millions of dollars, maybe privacy, and they kept some people doing misdemeanors. I don't know. It's like those things. They go all this money and all this effort. Same thing with like the TSA. After all these years, they never caught a terrorist. They've never caught you know anybody really, and they just steal people's stuff. All that stuff I mentioned. But yeah, so that's what's happened in Detroit. It's happened in Houston. More than likely, if you live in or near a big city, your local police department might be using ShotSpotter or some similar technology. I encourage you to check it out. Look into it. I actually just filed some open records requests today. About this technology in the city of Houston to the mayor's office and a couple other departments to try to see if we can get any interesting details. And if we do, we will be sharing those on Freethinker Radio, of course, first. But let's move forward. Johnny's got this interesting story about a city you might want to live in. Maybe. Maybe not. I don't know. What do you think, Johnny? I mean, this is...
That's an interesting name.
Well, you know.
Yeah, where is this happening?
Oh, dang it. You know what? I already forgot how to pronounce it, and I'm going to have to try again. We were talking about this before this. Anyway.
It's in Slovenia.
Better than you would have been before.
So, before you guys get all crazy, this is coming at you from Vice, so, you know, take that for what it is. And,
grain of salt.
Yeah. Two grains of salt. Says here, a city without cars is already here, and it's idyllic. Hmm. So, you know, big fluffy words and stuff. Sylvania's capital, Labucha. We tried really hard to pronounce this before the show, I'm sorry. But the capital of the country, Sylvania, has been car-free for over a decade, and is it time to export their model? So, you know, obviously this is connected to, like, the carbon footprint and that kind of stuff. But, like, they're really framing this as, like, an exciting new thing that should be, like, kind of, like, pushed on people. If you look at the rhetoric in the article, I'm not going to read all of it, but I'll get into some of it. It says, in an increasingly environmentally unstable world, there's a sense that car-owning city dwellers across the globe have to start thinking very seriously about just how important driving is to them. It's a question, too, for the civic authorities who oversee day-to-day life of everywhere from Athens to Zurich. Which is, yeah, spanning Europe, I assume. On the 19th of September, Parisians took to the street on foot to celebrate the 7th iteration of Paris Respire... I'm messing up these other languages. Paris Respire Sans Voiture, which means Paris breathes without cars. In the Palace de l'Hôtel, I took Spanish, and Avenues des Champs-Élysées into no-go zones for cars between 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. Essentially, in Paris, they're throwing a festival. I believe it's annually at this point. And it's like nobody drive in major cities from the hours of 11 to 6. And they're kind of like saying, like, well, maybe we could expand that. And originally we were talking about the capital of Sylvania, but that's a much smaller population of, like, you know, only like 300,000 compared to like a complicated city like Paris having to do something like this. But the real question is, it's like, that's good and well, like, cause like, obviously it's like, we don't hate on people riding bikes. Like, we know that, you know, certain things are bad for the environment or, like, whatever, it's healthy for people to ride bikes. And you should be able to have, like, viable paths throughout the city. But at the same time, we're getting into, like, as I'm going to go on here, you're getting into, like, some of the opinions of these, like, intellectuals who are, like, on the higher ends of, like, their society, like, the political commentators and stuff over in these areas who believe that, you know... global warming and things like that are such a problem, and that the responsibility is so much on what they would call like single occupancy drivers, that we actually need to start like enforcing times where cities like don't ride bikes. And that's what Vice is saying when this is idyllic, because they're saying
when they don't drive cars.
Yeah, so they're saying they don't drive cars, we're moving to bikes, and like kind of like pushing that on people more and more. Like maybe some cities would reward, but this is what they go on to say. The scheme wasn't always well received, so like shocker, yeah, some people were like upset they couldn't drive. Going back to Sylvania, by the way, the scheme wasn't always well received by Sylvanians. There were protests, says Sasa Polak Estinik, an academic who has written several papers on the impact that pedestrianization has had on the city. Residents living in the city, "Residents living in the city center thought that the transformations would make access to their homes impossible. We held several debates on the topic, but the then mayor Zoran Janković didn't back down in the face of opposition. Gradually, the city's residents began to adapt to the changes, and they adopted new routines to fit around them. They swapped their cars for bikes or took public transport. Despite initial misgivings about the long-term sustainability of cordoning off a section of the city from privately owned vehicles, some detractors still argued that a lack of cars had led to a cleaner, tidier, but less authentic and increasingly gentrified city center.
That's interesting. The writer
who I just quoted is of the opinion that it's been a decade now and none of us can really imagine cars ever staging a comeback in the city center. It is crucial that you outline to residents exactly what the plans are and why they are being proposed. She says, people are hesitant about change at first, but it becomes easier to accept a situation if you're made aware of the positives. She argues, and the award of the Green Capital status in 2016 surely confirms that the scheme has created a welcoming environment for tourists and residents alike. Everyone's got a bit more space to socialize or even exercise. And that's just from the article. There's more in it. And just to, like, add on to that, I was listening to NPR Houston today, and they were just talking about adding more bike lanes in the city and how difficult it is to bike, which, like I was saying earlier, it sounds nice. Like, why not have a bike lane for people who get around that way? But when you realize that they're talking about it in the sense of, like, the woman constantly was saying, like, well, we should start, you know, moving single occupancy, like, drivers away from, like, you know, driving and the carbon footprint and this and that. And I know you guys have, like, some tracking apps about people's carbon footprint. So yeah, some people might not see the larger picture in all of this because of the fluffy, like, greener on the other side kind of language. But, like, in reality, there's going to be a push for people to, like, kind of not be able to have the autonomy of traveling in your car. Or it could be a situation, like I was talking with you guys before the show, where we saw during the pandemic, governments and government officials get to arbitrarily decide whose job is essential in essential work. Well, I mean, who do you think is going to be regulating these types of situations? Like, if we hypothetically were bringing any of these into law, those same people sure as hell aren't going to be regulating themselves to have to bike to work. They're going to be making, you know, the majority of whatever jobs they feel are arbitrary. And the chances that you're going to get a large say in who and who is not allowed to drive is minuscule.
I think I think it's interesting. I checked out some facts. The city of Lublanja is 63.2 square miles. And they're talking about just having this bike-free zone that they've had for a decade now in the city center down along the river. I'm not exactly sure how big that is, you know. And it's almost like there's a lot of questions of scope of going from, you know, maybe like downtown Houston to Houston, where we joke about it being an hour from Houston, right?
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, I think that's possible. And so while people are happy about the positive sides of things, like applying those from this small scope of downtown Houston to the breadth of Houston,
See, that's why they were getting into the Paris argument to begin with, like, in the article. They're like, look, Paris is doing it. They're the larger city that's trying to, like, set an example. Maybe we could do this more often, guys, like, you know.
Yeah. So I think it's an interesting one because it is about the overall push, and we will continue to cover this. We'll see it in different ways, I think, in the coming years, the push for less and less vehicles, whether you like it or not, it's happening. We're just down to our last few minutes. I want to hit one headline and pass it to to you, Mike. I know
bikes
you got,
are cool.
You got at least one you wanted to mention about Elon.
Bikes are cool.
And I say that as somebody who does enjoy when Houston shuts down a few blocks and says, hey, let's have just bikes.
We're not hating on the bikers, by the way.
I bike every day. I've been hit on my bike.
It's a valid mode of
no hate on the bikers. We're freedom of choice.
Yeah, people should have the right to drive. But let's get down to, I got just one. Well, we got a few minutes left, and we'll play one more song. And if we got time, Mike, at least you can mention the headline of this Elon Musk one, because that's sure to trigger some people. Guys, this one is, again, it's a story that Micah and I, and Johnny, you were probably around when we were covering this, I think, on KPFT for sure, that there was this report that came out from the Chronicle a couple years ago, an investigation they did, I want to say in 2018, that was looking into, they interviewed people involved in the church, the Southern Baptist Church, one of the largest churches, and people were saying that there was sexual abuse going on, and that there was, the church was covering up, and, this was a big story. The Chronicle put it out. Of course, the church was denying all these different things. Well, now it's led to a bombshell 400-page report, which finds that Southern Baptist leaders routinely, on a regular basis, silenced sexual abuse survivors and did what they could to cover up the cases, just like we heard from the years of the Catholic Church and the Jehovah's Witness Church and other churches. That
it's almost like there's a pattern or something.
Yeah. So it says this is the bombshell findings of this third-party investigation, which was conducted looking into decades of alleged misconduct by Southern Baptist leaders, which said that for 20 years, leaders of the Southern Baptist Convention, including a former president now accused of sexual assault, routinely silenced and disparaged sexual abuse survivors, ignored calls for policies to stop the predators, and dismissed reforms that they privately said could protect children but might cost them too much money if the victims sued later. So while they publicly were like, that won't work, we can't do that, they were like, okay, we could do that, but we're going to end up getting sued, so let's not do that. And this report came out. Again, it's a third-party investigation that kind of came about, was hired to look into the church. And I think that's all I really need to say on it. Now the Chronicle has done some good stuff. But this report was published by Guidepost Solutions, an independent firm that conducted 330 interviews and reviewed two decades of internal files in the seven-month investigation. 400-page report. And, that's kind of the conclusion. There's a lot more to it, though. Obviously, there's the people involved. That's like the headline. But I did see the Chronicle did an additional story that I thought was worth at least mentioning and giving credit, where they did interview one of these survivors, because I think that's what's important. And sometimes the survivors get lost in the sensationalism and the headlines. And this woman talking to the Chronicle said she spent decades warning about the abuse, and that this week's revelations, the report, it brought no joy to her, because she's basically saying, like, I've been warning about this for decades and telling people I was a victim of it, and nobody wanted to listen. And now, okay, cool, we have a 400-page report that proves it. But is anything going to happen? Is anything going to change? What about the people who've been,
abused? Yeah, that's a good question.
And so, shout out to the Chronicle and everybody else who was involved in that original investigation. Definitely. To get that report out there, because that's important. And the other headline that I'm just going to mention, because it's gonna perk up your ears if you're really listening, hopefully not something you might just dismiss offhand, because I've spent some time trying to confirm it, as always, as everything we bring on this show. But I'll just share you the headline. I wrote this article yesterday called Utah County Sheriff's Office sets off debate with investigation into ritualistic child sex abuse. Now, of course, that headline, you heard those words. And what I write here is that, the last couple years, more and more people have become familiar with these things because of Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, those kinds of stories, and are open to these ideas happening. Now, other people think this is all QAnon type, screwy stuff, but these things do happen. And just last Tuesday, May 31st, the Utah County Sheriff's Office announced they were working with, quote, multiple county and federal agencies investigating reports of ritualistic child sex abuse from as far back as 1990. And that they were going to continue investigating this. And they said this began based on a report in April 2021, and that it involves three different counties and trafficking happening between 1990 and 2010. And that was the first kind of headline. And it set off a whole series of events that we don't have time to get into today. But the long and short of
it
is
we'll probably be following up.
We will be following up with this. But there's just local agencies kind of having some back and forth, accusing each other of different things. And the sheriff's office, I did talk to them. They said ritualized sexual abuse means something to do with religion or religious groups of people. They said it could involve individuals or it could involve groups. They were kind of being, they don't want to – that's usually how cops are. They're not going to give you a clear statement, especially when there's an investigation, obviously. And I don't want to interfere with it by any means, because I hope that if this story is true and the sheriff is really investigating this, that the truth does come out.
Yeah.
Because there's also reportedly, and has been confirmed, what they said, quote, top Utahans, politicians potentially and other people in the church that might be involved in this. So I hope that this is accurate. If this is accurate, that we find out more. So we will stay on that story as it evolves. Micah, you want to hit yours for a minute or two? You want to
No doubt. We are winding down to the last little bit. But, you know, I've been getting bothered. You know, you hear there for a while. I think it's died off. Like, Elon Musk.
Dogecoin.
Twitting, saying, talking.
People love him for some reason.
You know, they think. Here's what I had a issue with is the number of people. I don't know if y'all ran into these people, but that seemed to think like he was some sort of like scientist, creator, / free market individual, you know?
I heard he invented electricity.
Yeah, you know? So that's what I'm talking about. That this sort of over the top view of this
caricature.
Man. Yeah. And this article from Mint Press News, Elon Musk is not a renegade outsider. He's a massive Pentagon contractor. I don't know if you're surprised.
Which means he's working with the people who cause wars.
Yeah, no doubt. And it definitely means, you know, he's not just some guy who came up with a great idea and got it out there independent of government funding.
Is that corporate welfare?
Yeah, corporatism. Yep.
Statism, corporate welfare,
corporate welfare. He's a welfare baby. But yeah, he definitely had some money when he was born, but that's not the end of it. You know, he got a lot of setup money from the government. You know, so I wanted to get into that. From its origins in 2002, SpaceX has always been extremely close to the national security state, particularly the CIA. Yet Musk himself continues to benefit from the general perception that he is not part of the system. And that's kind of what I'm aiming at here. You know, and we don't have a lot of time to get into all of it, but I'm going to skip around a little bit.
And it'll be linked on our website soon.
Yeah, like all articles, so you can, you know, get into them for yourself. Musk, whose estimated $230 billion fortune is more than twice the domestic product of Ukraine, has garnered a great deal of positive publicity for donating thousands of Starlink terminals to the country, helping its people to come back online after fighting down the internet in much of the country. Starlink is an internet service that allows those with terminals to connect to one of over 2,400 small satellites in low Earth orbit. Most of these satellites were launched by Musk's SpaceX Technologies company. However, it soon transpired that there is far more than meets the eye with his donation. In fact, the U.S. government quietly paid SpaceX top dollar to send their inventory to the war zone. USAID, a government anti-insurgency agency that has regularly functioned as a regime change organization,
working with the CIA,
is known to have put up the cash to purchase and deliver at least 1,330 of the terminals to connect to Starlink. Starlink is not a mass market solution. Each terminal, which in effect a tiny portable satellite dish, has a limited range. Turns out that more than 10,000 Starlink terminals were allowing around 150,000 people to stay online. That's it. I mean, that's really not a lot of people when you think about it.
And there's definitely much more to that article. Alan McLeod did a great investigation there.
Yeah, I'd like to hit a couple more points. For example, in 2018, SpaceX was chosen to blast a $500 million Lockheed Martin GPS system into orbit. And, you know, that money got there from the Air Force. It goes on further talking about Tesla. I thought that was interesting, you know, and in the end, you know, world's richest man funded by taxpayers. In addition to the billions in government contracts Musk's companies have secured, they also received similar numbers in public subsidies and incentives. Chief among them is Tesla, which benefits greatly from complex international rules around electric vehicle production, basically green gas credits that allow them to sell these credits to the old polluters like BMW, GM, Ford, Hyundai, etc. $500 million interest loan from the Department of Energy, and the list goes on and on. This is corporatism. This is not capitalism. This is not free market.
Definitely not libertarian market, anything like people might want to hold them up to. I appreciate that, Micah. That's all the time we got for today. We'll continue this because I know Johnny wants to talk about his hamsters. We can get into the disinformation board and so much
hamsters,
more.
Hamsters, man.
But we'll be back next week, as always, uncensored news, underground music, and with that, but war is a racket. Don't forget that. See you guys next week.